welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 5, 2020. The United Nations prepares to open a new mission in Sudan.
A planning team is on the ground for a limited period of time to prepare options at a technical level for the phased deployment of UNITAMS.
And a media watchdog says press freedom is under attack in Sudan.
How do they define insult, or what do they say about spreading false information? The definition of false information is not there. Therefore, it can be ambiguous and applied to any kind of situation and can be applied in journalists just to silence them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A technical team from the United Nations is in the Sudanese capital Khartoum to prepare for the deployment of a new UN political mission to Sudan. The head of the visiting UN delegation says the team is in Sudan to assess the progress in the peace process and see what support is required from the United Nations to ensure the success of the peace talks in Juba. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The technical planning team of the United Nations Integrated Transitional Assistance Mission in Sudan, or UNITAMS, arrived in Khartoum on Monday and held a series of meetings with the Sudanese officials to prepare for the deployment of the mission unit in the ground. On Tuesday, the delegation met with the head of Sudan's Peace Commission to get updated on the peace process in the country. Delegation head Stephen Siguera told reporters after the meeting that the UN delegation is in the country for consultations with the Sudanese officials to determine how the mission will execute its mandate. The UN official says the team would have come last month, but due to COVID-19 travel restrictions, the group decided to coordinate most of its meeting remotely.
A planning team is on the ground for a limited period of time to prepare options at a technical level for the phased deployment of UNITAMS. The planning team will engage with the Sudanese and with the government as well as the executive committee for UNITAMS and to understand how the new mission should implement its mandate.
UNITAMS was established under Chapter 6 of the United Nations Charter according to the Security Council Resolution 2524 of June 3rd, 2020, based on a request presented by the Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. The head of the Sudan's Peace Commission, Suleimana Dabello, says he briefed the delegation on the peace process and discussed technical support to the commission. Speaking in Arabic, Dabello says government officials updated the UN team on the peace process.
We have explained to them some of our areas that need support, but our main objective now is to achieve lasting peace, and after that a clear vision of cooperation would be determined between the Commission and the new UN mission.
Speaking to this program via WhatsApp from Kampala, Uganda, Muhammad Abdurrahman Al-Nair, spokesman for the Sudan Liberation Movement, Abdul Wahid Faction, downplayed the success of the UN team in Sudan, noting the UN's inability to prevent violence in the Darfur region.
We don't believe the United Nations mission can succeed on the mandate under Chapter 6 because the situation in Sudan needs an international mission under Chapter 7 that can help to impose peace on the ground and disarm the Janjaweed militias.
Haj Hamad, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, says he believes history has proven that success of each UN mission in every country depends on whether the host country can put its house in order rather than waiting for the UN to do it on their behalf.
Most of the UN missions depend on success, on the integrity of the system that is inviting them. While it has been quite successful in Sierra Leone and Rwanda, it was a failure in Darfur. And even though in Darfur it is on Chapter 7, and you can see how weak and silent, to the extent that Darfur is now a kind of a battle theater.
The UN political mission will provide technical assistance to the Sudanese transitional government to achieve democratic transformation, provide support to the peace-building process, and prepare for the country for credible national election towards the end of the transitional period. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Sudan's military announced last month that it had built cases against journalists and activists who will be charged under Sudan's criminal and cyber laws for, quote, insulting the army. Journalists in Sudan say the statement has created an atmosphere of intimidation similar to the media environment under ousted President Omar al-Bashir. The spokesperson of the International Press Institute says the statement by the Sudan Armed Forces undermines freedom of speech in the country. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
In a statement released last month, Sudan Armed Forces said it had appointed a cybercrime military commissioner in June who will monitor and document so-called insults against the army. The statement says the army will bring legal cases against a number of journalists and activists working both inside and outside under Crimes Against the State, News and Publication Act, as well as a recently amended cyber law. It says the army has, quote, run out of patience with systematic attacks and accusations, end quote, targeting the Sudanese military establishment. Ravi Prasad, Director of Advocacy at the International Press Institute, a global network of editors, journalists, and media executives dedicated to promoting press freedom, says the situation in Sudan seems to be worsening.
It looks like the government is following the same path that the previous regime had followed of stifling press freedom and silencing their critics. Especially the army seems to be very, very sensitive to any kind of criticism. And the new laws that they're trying to bring in would completely stifle press freedom in the country.
On July 10, Sudan's Ministry of Justice announced several legal amendments, including one to Sudan's 2020 cyber law that would introduce more stringent punishments for cyber crimes to protect what the ministry called user rights and privacy and to prevent the spreading of rumors and harmful information. Saying that insulting the army would be an offense is difficult to fathom, said Prasad.
How do they define insult, or what do they say about spreading false information? The definition of false information is not there. Therefore, it can be ambiguous and applied to any kind of situation and can be applied on journalists just to silence them. This is unacceptable and Sudan should withdraw this amendment.
Prasad says journalists should be free to do their job without fear of retaliation by the army.
Appointing a military commissioner to deal with media freedom is something which has been unheard of. Trying journalists in a military court is not the right solution. It should not be a criminal case. It's the right of the journalist to report, and journalists speak truth to power.
Prasad says if the government does not like to be criticized, it should mend its ways rather than arrest journalists. Sudanese freelance journalist Dawood Abdulaziz says the use of cybercrime law against journalists and activists will take Sudan back to the military rule of the former president.
Now we are going back to Omar al-Bashir era, that dictatorship time, that crazy time. I do remember in the year 2007, the former regime used the same language to target us. And now the same thing is happening. The army now is talking about spread false news. This is just a trick to involve newspaper act and crime against the state. That was the criminal act of, as I remember, 1991.
Muhammad Ali Fazari is chief editor of the online English language newspaper Khartoum Today. He notes that Sudan improved by 16 points in the 2020 ranking of press freedom carried out by Reporters Without Borders compared to the year before, an improvement which the media watchdog attributed to Sudan's 2018 revolution. But Abdulaziz says these new developments may drive the country back to the bottom of the list.
This new amendment for sure is going to make the press freedom in the dark days, and also will not allow journalists to even criticize military institutions or armies, or even if you write anything about the Sudanese armed forces, you will find yourself in jail.
Speaking in Arabic, Khartoum-based activist Salma Suleiman, who hails from Darfur, says the army should not be telling activists what they can and cannot say.
The military institution is not benefiting the people and is implicated in violations of our human rights. So, as a revolutionary, I feel I have the right to insult it in whatever way they consider insulting.
In April, Reporters Without Borders ranked Sudan in 159th place out of 180 countries based on media freedom, saying although the provisional constitution adopted for the transition guarantees press freedom and internet access, the draconian laws that the old regime used against the media are still in effect. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Khartoum, we move to Kenya, where doctors say cancer patients are struggling to access treatment due to restrictions to control COVID-19. So far, Kenya has more than 22,000 COVID-19 cases and has reported about 370 deaths. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
39-year-old Margaret Mwangi is a mother of a 16-year-old cancer patient who has had recurrent brain tumors since he was 4. Through the years, he's lost his eyesight and had to drop out of school. These days, the mother says she's worried he won't get the care he needs because so many resources are going toward treating COVID-19 patients.
I am very worried, as I do not know if he will wake up tomorrow. I am worried about his future. When one goes to hospital, the doctors only seem to majorly concentrate with COVID-19 patients. We feel neglected.
Advocates say the pandemic is taking its toll on many cancer patients in Kenya. Lockdowns to combat the spread of the coronavirus have, according to some doctors, limited access to cancer facilities. Catherine Wachira chairs the NGO, Kenya Network of Cancer Organizations.
A large number of the oncologists we have in Kenya today are based in Nairobi. What this means is that patients from all over Kenya will have to come all the way to Nairobi to see these oncologists. With the lockdown measures in place due to the COVID-19 crisis, it becomes a challenge.
Wachira notes that social distancing measures due to the pandemic limit how many patients are allowed in hospitals. Many patients have also lost their jobs.
With the loss of income, they're not able not only just not to buy their drugs, but also to get proper nutrition. Now, when a patient is undergoing chemotherapy or radiotherapy, it is quite crucial and quite vital that their nutritional needs are well met.
That's what happened to Mwangi. She earned $5 a day from a grocery business, which failed due to the recent economic downturn. Now she's trying to make ends meet by weaving table mats, but sales are slow. At Nairobi Hospital, Gladwell Kiari, an oncologist, says some patients don't go to the hospital at all because they're afraid of contracting the virus.
That has also limited access to cancer treatment and diagnostics. Routine screening of mammograms and pap smears has also gone down because of this fear.
Nairobi Hospital is one of the leading private facilities that treats cancer patients in a country that has a shortage of specialists. Currently, doctors here say there are only 30 medical, surgical, and radiation oncologists in all of Kenya, making the ratio of patients per cancer specialist about 1 to 5,000. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan reports few new cases of COVID-19. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
Tried to like ask somebody for money, and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Health officials in South Sudan say there are few new cases of COVID-19 in the country. An associate professor of public health at the University of Juba says the low figures of the positive cases of COVID-19 does not represent accurate situation of the pandemic across the country. For VOA News, Oake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
When South Sudan confirmed its first COVID-19 case in April, there were fears the health ministry's low testing capacity would make it difficult to know the magnitude of the pandemic in the country. The Ministry of Health performs about 200 tests per day compared to about 50 COVID-19 tests per day back in May. But in recent weeks, there has been a drastic reduction in the number of positive cases, according to the health ministry. Many South Sudanese question whether the numbers are accurate for the entire country. Dr. Thoy Loy is the spokesperson for the Ministry of Health.
We are testing mostly in Juba and Numuli. South Sudan is not Juba and Numuli. So we don't know what is happening in northern Baragazal. We don't know what is happening in Abyei. We don't know what is happening in Raja. We don't know what is happening in Pagak. We don't know what is happening in Remus.
Dr. Matthew Toot is deputy manager of South Sudan Health Ministry's Emergency Operations Center, which oversees the fight against COVID-19.
If our capacity allows to test, let's say, for example, 500 or 1,000 samples a day, and we see the downward trends, confidently we can say, okay, the situation is coming down.
Testing has been expanded to some towns across the country, including the Jonglei State capital, Bor. But Dr. Toot says there are limitations.
In Bor now, we can test, but also it's not open testing. It's only very limited to the critical cases because the cartilages for gene expert are not available.
Health Ministry data shows medical workers tested 2,699 samples in May, of which 838 were positive cases. In July, medical workers tested 2,903 samples, of which 382 were positive. Nationwide, South Sudan has tested 14,447 samples and recorded 2,450 positive cases, 47 deaths, and 1,217 recoveries. Dr. Loy says many healthy officials thought the numbers would be higher by now.
For every one positive case of COVID-19, there is another 2.5 that we don't know of. So if we talked about 2,000 now that are positive, multiply the 2,000 by 2.4, that figure will come to roughly 4,000 plus that we don't know of.
Dr. Akwai Cham, Associate Professor of Public Health at the University of Juba, says the fewer positive cases reported in recent weeks do not necessarily reflect the reality of the pandemic in South Sudan.
People are very hopeful that things are decreasing, but the reality, I would say that it is not that not reflect the actual picture of the prevalence in the country right now.
The World Health Organization reported in recent weeks a surge in COVID-19 cases in several countries. Dr. John Rumunu, a WHO coordinator at the Emergency Operations Center, says cases recently doubled in 20 countries, including in neighboring Kenya. He says the low figures in South Sudan should not be misunderstood to mean the pandemic is coming to an end.
This is a warning to other countries that it is important to sustain public health measures and empower communities to protect themselves.
Dr. Rumunu says the WHO is working with the South Sudan's health ministry to ensure that momentum continues in the country for vigorous testing, contact tracing and treatment and isolation of COVID-19 patients to limit the transmission of the virus as much as possible. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on health matters, some health workers in South Sudan say the focus on preventing the spread of COVID-19 pandemic has affected access to maternal health services. A midwifery project coordinator at the United Nations Population Fund says travel restrictions in South Sudan have made it difficult for aid agencies to transport emergency supplies, including family planning drugs and other drugs for prevention of mother-to-child HIV transmission. The health workers say restrictions on movement has prevented some health workers from accessing health posts where mothers require maternal and neonatal services. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
The World Health Organization defines maternal health as the health of women during pregnancy, childbirth, and the postnatal period. It says each stage should be, quote, a positive experience, ensuring women and their babies reach their full potential for health and well-being. Dr. Kidane Abraha, midwifery project coordinator at the United Nations Population Fund, says COVID-19 travel restrictions make it difficult for health workers in South Sudan to ensure the health and well-being of pregnant women and those in childbirth because they cannot deliver emergency supplies and prenatal drugs to facilities or carry out examinations.
All these restrictions on movements.
These restrictions or movements affect so many aspects. First of all, the program delivery itself, because of normal context, is maternal health programs. By nature, I expect pregnant women to come to health facility regularly based on appointment given by the health profession, because they need to be checked and make sure that the pregnancy is moving well and their maternal health is not compromised.
Nyador Sarah Tuong, a clinical officer working at Joybor in Fanga County of Jonglei State, says some women's lives are at risk. Because with COVID-19 travel restrictions, health workers are unable to refer expectant mothers with complications to bigger health facilities in other states.
If a mother comes with obstructed labor or something else which need emergency referral, whereby now it's difficult for us, and by that now we are ending up losing the mother since we cannot at least refer to other location for treatment.
Peter Moot, a programs coordinator for the local NGO Healthcare Foundation, agrees. Moot's NGO provides maternal health care services in Fangak and Canal PG counties of Jonglei State and Awil East County of Northern Barkazal State. Moot says health workers cannot access certain areas where women require maternal health services due to the restrictions on movement.
Flying around has been so complicated. So you'll have to have a certificate, and when you come to Juba, you have to be quarantined. Going back, you have to have a lot of process. So sometimes, you know, with health workers, you have to sacrifice.
Moot says it was already difficult for pregnant women in remote areas like Fangak to access maternal health care services. With COVID-19 restrictions, he says the situation is far worse. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
And as the COVID pandemic rages and weakens fragile societies, terrorists lie in wait to pounce on vulnerable people, especially on the African continent, says a top U.S. military commander. U.S. military officials say their work on the continent has continued unabated, but that extremists are actively seeking every opportunity to gain a foothold from Senegal to Somalia. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
Violent extremist organizations, or VEOs, are seizing on Africa's coronavirus chaos to advance their goals in vulnerable societies, from Nigeria to Mozambique, says the head of U.S. Special Operations Command Africa, Major General Dagvin Anderson. He spoke to reporters via Zoom video conference from AFRICOM headquarters in Stuttgart, Germany.
I do believe the extremists will look to exploit any opportunity they get, and COVID presents those opportunities because COVID stresses any government. We know the governments in these in the nations of Africa are also feeling that stress, and the VEOs will look to exploit that. I can't tell you exactly how, because that will manifest itself in different ways in each of these countries. But these VEOs are very dynamic, and they're very flexible, and they will look to see where those weak points are or where that can be exploited, and they will go after it.
In West Africa, Islamist extremists have shut down educational systems. Anderson cited more than 3,000 schools shuttered by extremist groups in Mali and Burkina Faso. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, Central African Republic, and Mozambique, they've harnessed local grievances to feed their activities. And he said some of these groups count on foreign assistance from mercenary groups with murky affiliations. The shadowy Wagner Group is thought to be active in as many as 20 African countries, including Mozambique, Libya, Sudan, the Ivory Coast, and the Central African Republic. Anderson echoed analysts who believe the Wagner Group is closely connected to the Kremlin, a charge the Kremlin has denied.
Russia is directly engaged with them. I see them as being very corrosive. I see them as being detrimental to what should be a common international threat. Unfortunately, what we see is they're fueling the conflict in Libya. To say that that is a private military contractor, I think, is a bit of a stretch, because they're bringing in weapon systems that we saw recently reported in the press that private companies just don't have access to. Those are state-provided weapon systems.
Anderson also touched on the recent announcement that U.S. Africa Command headquarters would move out of Germany to another European nation. He noted that the disruptions of the coronavirus crisis didn't change or diminish U.S. operations in Africa, and reasoned that a change of headquarters would have little effect on their work. What worries him more, he said, is the pandemic's disastrous effect on government services and institutions in Africa. And he noted the military's role is limited and often too late.
We are often the firemen, that if you're calling the firefighters, it means the fire has already broken out, and that we need to do things to do fire prevention, and we need to be able to cut fire breaks to keep that fire from spreading. While I appreciate everyone's interest in what the military brings, if you're ringing the fire alarm, it's probably a little late. We need to do things ahead of it in order to prevent.
Right now, the American general said, families and communities across the world face uncertainty and fear as the coronavirus continues to spread. A military solution alone will not address their needs for food security, schools, decent health care, and basic government services. Some extremist groups say they arose specifically to address those injustices. But, Anderson said, their violent methods are a dead end. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Kang JJ singing in his native Nuer language. Listening to Kang JJ singing in his native Nuer language, or Tuk Nath. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.